This is The Radical Therapist, a space where we explore the intersections of collaborative therapy, philosophy, art, and science and technology in a post-Freud, post-psychology world.
Welcome to The Radical Therapist. We are now at episode 49, and thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to start with an apology. One more time, I've taken a little bit between episodes, but I have a good excuse. I've been very busy. I got some good news. I'm going to share some good news. I got two papers that have been accepted for publication. One is from my dissertation. I did a narrative analysis of students' experiences, and it's around developmental epistemology. You know, how do students experience learning? You know, the postmodern theories, the critical theories, and then the scientist practitioner research informed theories all simultaneously. And that paper got accepted in the Journal of Systemic Therapies, and I'm excited about that. And thank you to Elsie Lobo and Carmen Knudsen-Martin and Brian Distelberg for their support on that paper. And I also have another paper that's going to be coming out in a Springer brief that I co-authored with Justine D'Arrigo-Patrick and Beth D'Arrigo-Patrick, titled Colliding Discourses, Families Negotiating Religion, Sexuality, and Identity. And a paper we're all really proud of. And I actually get to share a case study, basically, in that paper. And I, you know, and as those come out, I'll let you know. You'll be hearing about them as well, probably in the future. And finally, my last bit of good news is I'm starting a full-time tenure-track faculty job at California State University San Bernardino. Very excited about that. Wonderful faculty there, including my writing partner, Justine D'Arrigo-Patrick. Some of you may know Lorraine Hedke or John Winslade from the narrative therapy community, stalwarts of the narrative therapy community, and I get an opportunity to work with all of them, and I'm very excited, and that's been taking up some time. It's been a really crazy month, at least this month and all of that, and last month, actually, just getting this all together. So anyway, that's what's going on. If I had promised to send you a t-shirt, it will be coming, I promise. I will be getting those out soon. I know some of you are probably wondering if I forgot about you. I did not. They're coming. They're coming soon. And so hang in there, and we'll get them out to you. Also, I think that's it. Yeah, I want to just say, you know, just some things you can maybe do to help us is to rate and review the show. I'm always asking you to rate and review a show, and I'm going to start doing spotlights on reviews on this show. And I'm going to do the first spotlight on review. We just got a review on iTunes by Rachel, and the heading on her review is "The introductions are way too long." Thank you, Rachel. She says, "I really appreciate the issues that Chris discusses with his guests, but his introductions really drag on for me. He seems to repeat himself often, loses his train of thought, and seems to fill time with unnecessary information. I would really enjoy listening to this podcast more if content was edited more selectively." Feedback taken, Rachel. Feedback taken, but, you know, welcome to my head. But anyway, even with all of that, Rachel gave the podcast 4 stars. So that is our spotlight on review. So if you would like to be spotlighted on our a spotlight review on the show, on the intro, please go to iTunes and rate and review the show. Tell us what you think. And maybe my introductions might get longer or they might get shorter. We don't know. So you never know, living in my head. So thank you for that, Rachel, though. I do appreciate the feedback. I do use feedback in my clinical work, and so I'm going to use feedback in my podcast work to the best of my ability. So, okay, so that's it. I got the good news out. We did our spotlight on review. I still have stickers. I still have some t-shirts. If you're interested, find us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, on the web, etc. Just find us. And And we did our, I think that's it. I think we're good. So we can get to the show. So I think one thing I'm really interested in is, you know, how do I ask better questions? I'm going to go up to, that's what I forgot to mention. I'm going to be doing, I got invited to go talk at the POMO, the Denver POMO Therapist Gathering, which will be on October 13th. So if you are in or around Denver, Colorado on October 13th, please come visit us. You can find the Denver POMO Therapist on Facebook. They do have a website, Denver POMO Gathering, P-O-M-O Gathering.com. DenverPomoTherapist@gmail.com if you want information. It's very affordable to attend this event. There's great speakers that are going to be there. Dr. Travis Heath, David Matheson, for example, Jen Rushnick, Steve Bennett, and myself. I'm going to be talking about narrative therapy with families. I'm going to be bringing video work with families. And I'm also did a co-research project where I sat down with families that I did work with. And after the work was over, sat down with them and asked them what they thought worked in family therapy and what didn't work in family therapy and about the work that we did together. And some of them had previous experiences with different sorts of approaches in family therapy, and then they get to share a little bit about what it was like to experience the narrative collaborative perspective. So I think you'll find that interesting. I'm bringing real video, real families with me, their experiences with me, and I'm going to share that. So anyway, so sorry, Rachel, I went on again and I'm all over the place, but I'm going to keep trying. Let's get to our guest. So one of the things I'm really interested in is like questions. So I'm going up to Vancouver. I'm going to do this thing with Stephen Madigan and some of his crew at the Vancouver School of Narrative Therapy in a couple of weeks. And it's all about, you know, question development stuff, which I'm really interested in. How do we ask better questions in the work that we do? How do we create transformative conversations? Questions that transport people, questions that transport me, those kinds of things. And so I'm really excited about our guests. Both Sherry Torres and Jackie Stavros wrote this book, Conversations Worth Having, Using Appreciative Inquiry to Fuel Productive and Meaningful Engagement. And you'll get some information at the end of the interview of how to get that or where to find them. But let me tell you a little bit about them. Jackie Stavros is a professor and DBA program manager at the Graduate College of Management, Lawrence Technological University, a principal corporation for positive change, and a charting co-owner of Appreciative Inquiry Consulting. She works primarily with small to medium-sized organizations in a wide variety of industries. Automotive, healthcare, banking, government, NGOs, etc. And she currently resides in Brighton, Michigan. That's Jackie. And Sherry Torres is a partner at Innovation Partners International, a senior consultant at nextmove.is, and an associate at the Taos Institute. Yay, Taos Institute. I'm an associate there as well. She has trained thousands of trainers and teachers in the use and practice of appreciative inquiry and experiential learning with a particular focus on leadership development, teamwork, creativity, and sustainable collaboration. And she currently resides in Asheville, North Carolina. So that's a little bit about Jackie and Sherry. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. There's really stuff you can use in your practice after listening. So without further ado, let's meet Jackie and Sherry. Okay. Hi, Jackie, Sherry. Welcome to The Radical Therapist.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. I really enjoyed your book, Conversations Worth Having. And I just think it's a very, I thought it touched on a lot of things that I think would be very interesting to therapists. Social worker, psychologist, what have you, around conversations and questions in particular, or asking better questions. But before we get into all that, I think my first question for you both would be, I guess I would like to start by asking, kind of, or maybe for our audience, kind of sharing how you conceptualize conversations, how do you characterize the nature of conversations, and then what makes a great conversation?
Okay, so I'll start with conversations are how you and I and Sherry are interacting. You have conversations in your mind. They're kind of like the lifeblood of how we communicate and get things done in our relevant communities.
Sherry?
And if you think about the kinds of conversations that you have with people, they typically fall into four different categories. If you think of some of your conversations as actually adding value, you can either add value by making statements or you can add value by asking questions, which is very often what therapists do. You ask the right question, you add a great deal of value.
Sure.
And so those are two kinds of conversations people have. And then there are depreciative conversations, which actually devalue people or situations. And when they are statement-based, they're often destructive. And when they're inquiry-based, they are often critical. And the person on the other end feels devalued. So therapists in general are typically aiming for appreciative conversations that are both inquiry-based as well as statement-based. And the conversations that we say are really worth having and what makes for a great conversation is conversations that add value where both people are engaged in inquiry and discovery and expanding understanding, connection, and possibilities.
What's your take about, I think everybody's on social media, they're seeing what kind of conversations are happening, and you brought up this idea of depreciative conversations, and I'm wondering, are we in a climate of depreciative conversations at this moment?
I think at the national level, and possibly at the global level, yes. Because that's the voice that is being, at least in the United States, there's a depreciative voice, and it's inspiring a lot of us against them, which tends to be very depreciative. I think when you get down into communities and neighbors and people, I don't think that's true. I think when people are interacting, regardless of who they are or you know, what their either political or value basis, people most of the time, I think, have appreciative conversations with one another.
And I would echo that in the political world, the political climate, there is a lot of depreciative, destructive. But I think in organizations today, people mm-hmm. are thriving for productive and meaningful engagement. And so if you look at the level of conversations, you know, and we make a note in the book that you have the individual, the team, the organization, the departments, even industry. I think they're thriving and flourishing off of appreciative inquiry-based conversations. And maybe the political sector could learn from this.
Great. So how can we as maybe just as neighbors, as therapists, as community members, how can we know what kind of conversations we are having? I think you break it down into critical, destructive, or affirmative. And I'm wondering if you can kind of maybe give us some tips on paying attention to the kinds of conversations we're having.
So if you look at the appreciative inquiry-based conversations, there's two practices that we encourage, and they're about positive framing and generative questions. So we can nail it down to that if you and I are going into a session, a therapy session, we can think about the framing of what are the challenges and the problems and the issues this person is up against, and how do we flip it to the opposite and begin to frame it through the asking of generative questions so that person is beginning to feel valued, but it's going back and forth into a conversation. So that's the positive framing. Sometimes you're in a conversation and the conversation could be stressful or negative or critical. And by asking a generative question, you can almost flip the frame of it And a generative question would be, if somebody is complaining or has a problem, my favorite generative question would be, so Chris, tell me what you would like to see happen. What do you want more of? Or what are three wishes that you have for this situation? And that's the generative question is, we don't have the answer, but we have a genuine curiosity to have a conversation with somebody.
I think also in just in response to your wondering how do people tell what conversation they're in, an appreciative conversation and one that's worth having will have a tone and direction that is positive. And you can actually feel yourself opening, connecting to the other person, expanding your ideas. There's this, in neuropsychology, we would say that you were really engaging from the prefrontal cortex with other people. Whereas in a depreciative conversation, which was critical or destructive, you would have a sense of closing down, of feeling the need to protect yourself. That might even result in defending or attacking or coming back at the other person. And it would be a focusing on me as opposed to we in the interaction. And so I think that when you sense you're in this, I'm needing to protect myself, the things that Jackie was mentioning about asking a generative question, either of yourself, why am I feeling the need to protect myself, or the other person asking what's going on for you, so that it shifts that kind of brain chemistry again, so you can open back up to connect.
So how are, I guess I have a question, how are generative questions different than maybe open-ended questions, or how do we, I guess I'm wondering, how can our listeners know they're crafting generative questions rather to questions that are going to do something, right?
I think the simplest way to know if you're asking a generative question is to ask yourself two things. Do I already know the answer to this question? And if you already know the answer or suspect
great.
You do, it's not generative. And the other thing is, am I really curious about this? So if you're really curious and you don't know what the answer is, it's going to be a generative question. It's going to generate connection, understanding, new knowledge, possibility, et cetera.
And from a feeling state, you actually physically feel yourself leaning in, and you can just feel how your body feels excited. And so we added a chapter in our book about the science behind this, and that it can extend your life. It can extend your moments. You're looking forward to talking to that person.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that. Okay, you also write about several appreciative inquiry principles, and maybe just for our listeners' audience that aren't, or our audience that is not, might not be familiar with appreciative inquiry. I'm wondering if you can maybe talk a little bit about appreciative inquiry and then how you use it to drive conversations, and maybe some of the principles around it, like the constructionist principle, the poetic principle, the anticipatory principle, and some of these principles that drive these kinds of conversations.
So I'll start with the definition, and then Sherry, I'll hand it over. Maybe I'll start with the constructionist principle and hand them over. So if you think of the practices, generative questions and positive framing, the principles are what help to drive your tone and direction. And appreciative inquiry, my best definition of it, it's about a discovery into the best of what was, what is, and what could be. So it's looking for the best in peoples and teams and organizations and relationships. That's appreciative inquiry. It's a way of being, a way of thinking, a way of asking questions. The principles, which come out of the seminal work from David Cooperwriter, the first one, which is a very powerful principle, is social construction. And it means that our words create our moments and our conversations create our world. So you have to choose your tone and direction in the construction of your conversations very carefully.
Yeah, just to add to that, I just learned that in Stanford, they're doing research on the epigenetics of words, language, and conversation, and have actually discovered a gene sequence for language and words that help. They, our words and our conversations turn DNA on and off. And so it's, our words are extremely powerful. And hence we construct our social systems in the way we engage with each other. The other principles there are five of them, and I think that rather than going into the detail on each one of them, I think that if you look at the first one, which is our words are very powerful, and the constructionist principle is part of that, but also the principle of simultaneity, that the moment we speak, we engender a change or a shift in another person. As a therapist, if you ask someone to recall a time when they were at their lowest, you can watch them go into a physical state that shifts. Or you can say, I want you to recall a state when you were really at your best and able to handle this kind of situation. And you'll see a completely different state, physical, mental, and emotional state. And they'll start to go there the moment you get partway through the question. So our words are extremely powerful. And the other is this notion of this self-fulfilling prophecy, that our beliefs and our assumptions kind of direct what we pay attention to, and what we focus on, we actually manifest or we grow. So in any organization, in any person, as therapists know, you could focus on all the problems in a person, and that's what you would see, a person with a lot of issues. Or that same person, you could focus on their strengths, their talents, their wishes, their dreams, and that would look like a completely different person. So it's, what are we paying attention to? What do we anticipate? Because we're going to look for that. We're going to listen for it. We're going to behave in ways that actually bring it about. And the more positive our questions, the more positive the descriptions we have for things, the more likely we are to live into them. And so the principles tell us that pay attention to your words, because they're not
neutral.
They're not neutral and they're not trivial.
Right.
And pay attention to your thoughts and what you're anticipating.
I would just add, I'm sure you may have said the poetic principle, that you can use this anytime, anywhere, any situation, and that people come from different perspectives. And AI has been used at the of talking with self, talking with one, or talking with others on just about anything.
That's great. You also write about, we're kind of talking about this interpersonal kind of communication, maybe one-on-one, but you also write about scaling up more engaging and meaningful conversations that can impact communities and organizations. And I'm wondering if you can talk about how you do that. And I know you referenced the appreciative inquiry 5D process. Mm-hmm. I remember when it was a 4D process. So I guess that was new to me, and I'm glad, that was fun. And then, so I'm wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about that, how you scale up these conversations, and maybe take us through the 5D process.
Sure. So if you think about, we've given you two practices of positive framing and generative questions, and we've explained the principles, the five principles. The 4D cycle, which you mentioned, it came 10 years after appreciative inquiry was a discipline, a way of being. And the 4D was a stage of, if we're going to scale it up and there's going to be more than two or three people involved, let's go about a discovery. And that's the questions. So you enter discovery. Traditionally, it's one-on-one interviews, and then you have tabletop interviews, and then they're sharing with the team. And the second D is dreaming. And that's where you go to thinking about co-creating a shared vision, where you see the organization or the team moving into. The third D hits reality. It's design. that how might be, what might be. You've got to be able to take the energy of the strengths and the possibilities discovered, that vision, that dreaming, and you got to make it a reality. So it gets into design thinking and design principles and designing, how are we going to make this a reality? The fourth D actually went through several iterations. The original D was delivery. We have to deliver that which we designed, dreamed, and discovered. And then it was destiny, because of the iterative nature of the cycle. And sometimes we hear the word deploy. So even that fourth D has gone through several different D changes. And then you mentioned it's the 5D. For those involved in the world of organization development, the 5D is really the first D now, is defining, how do you want to use appreciative inquiry? How do you want to scale up a great conversation? Where do you want to scale up this great conversation? And who do we invite so that the whole system is representative? And that's, so the 5D cycle, in my thinking, is a methodology of applying appreciative inquiry to the scale of the whole of teams and divisions and organizations.
Sure,
and communities and nations and cities. It's it really is a way to engage large numbers of people in very meaningful conversations about the best of what is and co-creating the future. And the reason it is so effective is because people begin in those paired conversations, and then they move to small group discussions, and out of that share back with the whole and back into small group discussions. So it's very much of an ongoing conversation worth having at a systems level.
That's great. I think my final questions for you is, can you suggest, or maybe suggest to our listeners, some ways that they could get started having different sorts of conversations? I think you say in the book, anytime, any place, and in any situation, right?
So the easiest place, I think, to start is just start practicing questions. Start asking questions that you don't know the answers to. And if you start to ask a question and you're like, oh, I think I know the answer to this, ask yourself a question first. Do I really know the answer to this, or am I just assuming I know the answer? And if you start practicing challenging your own assumptions and the stories you're making up about what actually is happening, and you just look at the facts, you discover there is very little I really am absolutely sure of. And so beginning to ask questions, suddenly your relationships open up and your capacity for connecting and discovering possibilities just explode. So that's where I would start, with questions.
And to give you an example, if you think in the world of your audience, a therapist, think of a question, which I like to call the purpose question. Why are these sessions important to you? You know, why are these sessions important? And really understand, and you could even ask, what was the high point experience of our last session that really helped you? And the third question, a generative question, is, you know, what is the positive core? What is it that gives life to who you are and how you interact and how you're being out there? And you can ask the vision question, seeing yourself in the next few months or year out, where do you see yourself? How are you thriving? How are you flourishing? And my magical question, the fifth one, is always, if you had three wishes for your health and vitality, what would it be and who could help you get there? So that's a series of generative questions that they could start asking.
That's great. Okay, so how would the listeners find you? I guess we want to do that. Like, maybe Jackie, you can start, and then Sherry, how would they find you? And then how do they find the book? And if they wanted to reach out to you, et cetera.
So the best place to start is you can go to the book's website, which is www.conversationswithanswworthhaving.today. It's the title of the book. So it's www.conversationswithanswworthhaving.today. You go there to our website, you can download the preface for free. We have the introduction by David Cooper Writer, and we also have a document that summarizes a lot of what we talked about here, And there's a half a dozen different buttons that you can click on, from Amazon to Barnes & Noble to Audible to order the book. So thank you for asking.
Yeah.
And you can reach either Jackie or me at conversationsworthhaving.today. Jackie's J-A-C-K-I-E, and I'm C-H-E-R-I.
That's great. Jackie, Sherry, I want to thank you both for making the time out of you. I know you're busy, and I want to thank you for your patience. We've been trying to make this happen for a little bit, but and we've had some technical snafus, but I want to thank you for your patience and hanging in there with me and doing this conversation. So it's been great.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. That's our show. I hope you enjoyed it. Please spread it around, share it with your friends or other colleagues that you think might find it useful. Like I said in the beginning, I got some stuff going on. I'm going to be at the Denver Pomo Gathering October 13th. If you're in or around, I would love to meet you. Come find us on social media. The Radical Therapist is on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and we have a website too, theradicaltherapist.com, and you can contact me via that. And of course, like I said, I have some stickers. I have some t-shirts. If you're interested in that, let me know. Otherwise, as always, this has been The Radical Therapist. My name's Chris Hoff. Thanks for listening.